Just give the average Joe an insight of what's it like playing at this level.
Friday night's always been a personal favourite of mine. You've got the long weekend. Everyone's just wanting that release, that stimulation, just to watch a macabre sport of gladiatorial confrontation. And you feed off that as athletes. Like, you love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
It's drop kickoff time once again. It's 2024. I have to believe it's going to be a good year. And I'm joined by not one, not two, not three, not five, but four people on the podcast for the opening episode of the year. First of all, the trusty Nathan Williamson, back by my side, back for another year of the sport that hurts us till we love it. How are you, mate?
Absolutely. I can say it's a joy to be here, and you know, I'm ready to get hurt again.
You're ready to get hurt again? It's the truth. It's the truth, and we love it to bits. I'm also joined by a man who is a really big deal. Josh Murphy, you're like doing a whole bunch of stuff this year, aren't you? You're doing like a couple of, stuff's happening out at Madawi right now, at Madawi Rugby Club, but you're doing a couple of other things on the side this year as well in rugby circles, aren't you?
Yeah, it's one of those years where you get to develop and expand, but there's always time for you boys and to weep in bed at night over the Wallabies woes, just to change. And hopefully, 2024 changes for me.
Amen, I hope so. And then lastly, he's returning to the pod for the first time in a very long time, and it is for absolutely no topical reason whatsoever. It's got nothing to do with any sort of chaotic events happening down in Melbourne. Dylan Langes, how are you, my friend? Long time no see.
Yeah, a while. I think the last time I appeared on the podcast, I might have set some sort of viewership record with a bit of a rant I went on. So I wonder why you had me back.
Yeah, no idea. There's definitely been nothing happening in Melbourne of late. So we'll...
Nah.
It's
it hit 40 degrees yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's the key things that happened. But we like to kick off. We've got a new format, new ideas for the pod this year. But we're going to try and give the impression that we're one of those new fresh hip pods. But really, it's the same stupid jiggery fuckery and terrible edits that you're used to. But we're going to kick off with a ridiculous left field topic because I love talking stupid hypothetical discussions, and I know Nick Hartman definitely does. So we kick off by talking about one of the first big pieces of news from the last episode was, of course, the rumours about Eddie Jones going to Japan were in fact true. Who'd have fucking thought? So the question I asked... Yeah,
no.
I know. Yeah, it's true. Hey, it's really true. It actually happened. So true to form, now that it has been confirmed, I want to ask you both, and Dylan, I'm going to throw to you first as it is nice to have you back on the show. What team would you stab your country in the back for?
Yeah, Jay, this is a bit of a loaded question, isn't it? It's sort of like throwing us. I actually thought about this and went, well, given my heritage and the fact that they've never been to a World Cup, the Netherlands, to go in, you know, turn my back on Australian rugby, and I'd have to because I can't be a dual citizen. I actually have to stab this country in the back to coach that team. So that'd be... given my heritage, my dad was born there. And they've never been to a World Cup. So if I could bring them to a World Cup, like, that'd be a pretty big feat.
Nothing to do with the red light district or anything. Strictly rugby.
just strictly rugby.
Yeah, amen to that. And, hey, look, it's a developing rugby part of the world. I mean, we were just talking about it beforehand. But Josh, you mentioned that, like, rugby nation next door, Germany, they literally just knocked off. Who was
Georgia.
It? Georgia. They knocked off Georgia recently, which is absolutely insane. So I reckon, Dylan, you'd actually be in a pretty decent stead there. Get some German blood over in the Netherlands. Nothing terrible's happened over there with that sort of stuff.
No.
Mr. Murphy, who would you stab? Which place would you go to?
Well, only reason being is there's some family support over there, strictly for the fact that it's the Misters. I'd have to go to the Poms. Just for the fact, for two reasons. One, there's family there. And two, because I'd never get on the bloody team anyway. So I've got somewhere to crash.
I'm actually disappointed in you.
That's always
brown. Controversy, boys. Come on.
Oh.
We're on a new software. I'm looking for the button to kick someone off. How do I find that? Remove from stage? Would that do it?
This is like my head. My headspace is I may be like a monster for stabbing my country in the back, but I'll never stoop so low to get involved with English rugby. What is this? I respect
it. How did you go that low? Jesus.
I didn't have any to begin with. Have you seen Australian rugby? Come on.
I said, I don't know what you're talking about, mate. Mr. Williamson, you actually, I know this is more of a loaded question for you because you're actually on the payroll. So who would you stab Australian rugby in the back for?
See, I couldn't, I'm Josh going that low. I can't, unfathomable. I'm going to New Zealand. Hear me out. As a double agent, I'm convinced I'm cursed at this point. Like as soon as I sort of started understanding the game of rugby, we started losing. We haven't been successful since. I'm a cursed one here. So I'm going to go there. I'm going to just infiltrate the system. They're going to start losing because losing follows me in rugby. And I come back a hero. I will stab my country in the back, but it'll be for a good reason. I will come back. It'll be just the perfect narrative coming full circle. I'll come back a hero.
So you don't stab us in the back. We'll send you over. No stress.
Yeah, well, it'll be all expenses paid flight. We'll send you over. Be fine. I mean, you're doing it for the right reason, which I respect.
My heart's in a good place.
Fuck New Zealand rugby over.
That's all it is.
Impossible question. I personally would just really like to go to Ireland. Not for any reason other than just there seems to be a lot of Aussies over there. They seem to have transformed the rugby over there. And also the Irish are just really fun to hang out with. And every single time I've gone to Ireland, I've really loved it. So it's purely just for my ticking things off my list and going traveling around. And also because it's just nice to be in a country where the team's actually winning. Very satisfying.
What's that like?
Spanish? What was that word?
Winning?
I think it's... What is this word? I think it's a... I heard it was like a type of cuisine from the Mediterranean. Winning. But yes.
Vining? The W
Vining!
With a V sound? Vine?
Yes.
It's Vine.
Vine.
All right. Well, normally we like to do a whole bunch of topics. This is what we would do in the past. But instead, I am now going to introduce you to Nathan Williamson's 2-Minute News Roundup. Nathan has 2 minutes. I'm actually going to time you, by the way, Nathan. I didn't tell you this before we started recording.
Great. All right.
And I'm going to time you, and you have 2 minutes to round up news from the past. This is going to be an especially difficult one because it's been how many months since we last recorded an episode? So you need to nail down all of the key results within 2 minutes. Are you ready, Mr. Williams?
Holy shit, puns prepared. I'm not going to get this in 2 minutes. All right. Let's go.
Well, I like to throw you under the bus. It's not like I haven't thrown you a hospital pass before. So, Nathan Williamson, what is happening in the rugby world? Your time starts now.
All right, let's start with Six Nations. So we had Scotland get up over Wales. We had Finn Russell Crowe go full gladiator and get the win by a point. Head to Italy as George Ford put his Mustang in gear as the full Montuani was enough for Italy. To start the tournament, we had Ireland send Marseille into the Blues as they got the win 38-17. Off to Perth. Pair of second place finishes as the Australians ended up runners up on home soil. Both Levi sisters need to work on their boot cut tackles as they ended up both getting sent off. The ridiculous tackles that they should be better at. That's another point. Super Rugby trials. Harry Potter, Leviosa his way to victory for the fourth with a double get over the Reds. You then have the Brumbies kept on rolling like a river as they're more overpowered the Fijian Drua and Viking Park. Had Daniel Maiova cook up the Waratahs, get a double, as the Rebels finally got some good news with a victory in their first trial. You have Australian fans now celebrating two Joes, one Schmidt, leaving all the fans to go, holy Schmidt, and every other shit Schmidt joke they're about to pull next 30 seconds. Meanwhile, we have Wallaroos can't stop yapping about their coach with Joe Yap, the first female, the only female coach of an Australian women's team. Although combat team. Shit, I've just lost myself 5 or 10 seconds there. Melbourne Rebels, administration. And that's, I have no shit puns. That's a really sad situation. And Super Rugby season's about to kick off. We're the Crusaders taking on the Chiefs. And I've run out of puns in time, I think.
30 seconds left. You absolutely crushed it. Well done. I'm vibing the effort, not going to lie. Note to self, I'm going to give you much less time for the next roundup. Cleaned up way too quickly.
Give me 80 seconds.
For everyone out there, just realize how long 2 minutes actually is.
Yeah.
anyone that listening to that is probably thinking that's about 10 or 15 minutes at that point.
So it's always like when you're giving a uni presentation or speech and you've got 2 minutes and you go, fuck, 2 minutes, how am I going to fit this all in there? And you get up there and you go, fuck, it's 90 seconds. I finished. Do I get off? What do I say? Because you always think it's like too long, but it's not.
So many puns written. I'm like, all right, I think this is going to get me to 2 minutes. Make me 3 minutes, and I just race through. I'm like, oh, well, fuck it, that'll do.
We'll make sure for future iterations of Nathan's news roundup that we make it much much more tight for you to actually smash through those results.
Leviosa's one. It's done. On to the next one.
I have 6 or 7 ready to go. Please, I'm prepared. I'm going to burn through them all this year.
I vibe it, but part of me also is like, another part of me was like thinking, like, God dang it, he would be so sick of this bullshit. Like, all the Harry Potter references. He would be so sick of it. And then, like, in the news, I wanted to just resist the urge when, like, looking at the new, like, watching the trial on Saturday and being like, oh yeah, let's say a magical pun about Harry Potter, because I'm like, oh, no, do I go that easy option? Do I go the easy way out, or do I come up with something else? Keep the puns coming though.
This always is Australian rugby, Nick. You take the easy option.
that certainly hasn't ended badly for us at all. No.
Gambridge.
Well, we're going to talk about two main topics of discussion that we'll kind of dive into in a little bit more detail. Joe Yap was announced way earlier last year, so it's been quite established that she's ready to go and ready to rock. But it has only been, you know, probably a few weeks since the announcement of Joe Schmidt as coach of the Wallabies. So with that in mind, let us raise a middy for Schmidty and hope he's not too shitty. And let's talk about Joe Schmidt. And the first key question that I kind of want us to ask here is essentially, is he the right bloke for the Wallabies? And what do we consider success with Schmidt as coach? And then the fact that he's only signed on for 2 years, I'm assuming, Nathan, you probably would have more you know, clarity as to the exact reason behind that. But let's talk about Joe Schmidt. And Mr. Murphy, you are a fellow coach. You are a coach definitely on the same level as him. You're a very big deal. Thoughts on Joe Schmidt initially? What do you think?
Well, I had to give him a chance first. That's why I didn't apply for the role myself. I thought better someone else that really wanted to commit to the country in the rugby world. No, look, I think it's a good standing point for us to get a platform. I think there hasn't been a real platform. We've been just going in every which direction. And because we've been doing that, you know, the highs and lows of Eddie, the, you know, the bullshit with the players, everything else happening in the world that we live in, I think it's really good the fact that he's quiet and people are just not going to know that he's there. And I think that's going to be a bonus for Australian rugby, where he can just go on and get on with his business. And while he's getting on with that, other people are going to be fronting the media. Other people are going to be doing the work for him. And that's where I'm hoping the results will come from, and the players will buy into the coach. Because right now, the players haven't bought into coaches for the last few years. And it's about time that we realise that we've got something in front of us. And hopefully, yeah, I won't be weeping tears of sorrow into my pillows.
Australian rugby, we always will be in some perspective.
It is like, I know that it just feels like that it has been tears of weeping and sorrow for the last couple of years. But I liked this call. I really did. But part of me was initially thinking maybe it's initial optimism because of the fact that finally we have an answer to the question of who's gonna actually take on the role. What is this the future of the Wallabies going to look like? I mean, his record in Ireland is really good, excellent. In fact, he came back to New Zealand, turned things around really, really well, particularly for Ian Foster after that series against the Irish, which the New Zealanders I still don't think have actually forgiven Ireland for. Even though they knocked them out of a quarterfinal, I still think they'll hate them forever, pretty much. But there's a lot to like about this call. Dylan, what are your thoughts here? Where do you think, what do you actually think success, for example, looks like if you are, you know, an average Aussie pundit like us, and we look at this selection and we go, okay, he's got to get ready for, like, you know, a series against, you know, against Wales coming up. I think there's a test match with Georgia as well. What do we think? What do we consider success for 2024 with Joe?
I'd probably say a positive win to loss ratio, which we haven't had. I don't remember the last time we had one. I'm not saying win every game, but I think we kind of got to, by the last few years, we've been really just accepting of those narrow losses. Oh, we almost beat the All Blacks. Oh, we almost beat South Africa. And it's just really not doing anything because we're just coming up with excuses. It's more put kicking the can down the road. I'm excited for Joe Schmidt. I think that he's the kind of guy we need. I know that you and I sort of got into a bit of Twitter or X or whatever it's called now, because, you know, there's everyone calling for an Australian coach. Well, we don't have a really good Australian coach. And Joe Schmidt is a kind of guy. Sorry, Josh. It's all right, mate. I got sent everyone I knew sent me that job ad too. And they're like, if you can coach third grade in Melbourne, you can coach the Wallabies. And I went, practically the same thing. It's, you know, babysitting egos. No, I love my players. I'm just taking the piss. No, I think it's actually a really good thing. And I think the one thing that people aren't talking about with Joe Schmidt coming in is also that he's coming back with David Nusafora. And that's been a very strong combination that they've with the Irish rugby. I couldn't tell you how long they worked together, but it was a very successful pairing. And I think that's what we also need.
It's interesting that, like, Les Kiss, who worked with Joe Schmidt a lot, under the Ireland, like when he was over in Ireland, kind of basically said that, you know, he'll cut through the crap a little bit, which I kind of want to ask the two coaches' opinions on here, because, I mean, one of the key things that you can do is you can come up with a brilliant, genius game plan, but actually translating it over to the players and getting buy-in from them is another thing entirely. By the sounds of it, one of the strengths that he actually has is an ability to be like, you know what? Here's the key things. Here's the key shit that you need to focus on. Focus on that and focus on these things here, and then everything else in this plan will fall into place. Is that, like, do you reckon we've maybe probably had a situation, dare I say it, where we've had too many talkers and too many people keep coming up with crazy ideas and plans and over-explaining shit, and then you'll have a coach, they'll be like, nah, this is how you do it. Do it like this.
But he's got a track record, right? It's something that we haven't had for a while, where a coach has got a decent track record that we're, you know, paying for. So now we're in a situation where there's automatic buy-in. If you look at that and see success, the players should have buy-in. And he's a quiet leader. He's adamant that he's boring, and I hope that is truly the case, because if I have another animated Australian coach, God knows what happens. It might just become another American school shooting. Like, it's just terrible, right? Like, Just pull it back, right? Disclaimer, it was a joke for anyone that's offended. But still, it's one of those things, right? It's, I think that you'll quietly lead the team and we'll be able to jump forward from that.
I do think we've had a lot of, you know, these big talkers, the us versus the world sort of style, which works for some. And as when you coach players, everyone's got a different style they like. You know, I'm sure mine and Josh's style could be very different to each other. Yeah, I think the rah-rah of Eddie Jones and the aggression and of, like, Michael Checker, they work for a little bit, but they don't work forever. You know, in the same way that if you listen to interviews with guys that played under Eddie back in the early 2000s, they'll talk about him being the very aggressive, yell, swear, abusive coach. That doesn't work anymore. You can't do that with players. But I think he still had a lot of that. So I think someone like Joe Schmidt being boring, being quiet, is probably a nice change of pace. And yeah, as Josh said, he's got a winning record. That's could be enough to get these guys to buy.
Nathan, here's a question though. There was kind of one asterisk about Schmidt's appointment, and that was that he's only contracted currently until the end of 2025. So realistically, after the Lions series. And obviously there are multiple factors in there as well. I mean, not for the least of which personal ones involving his son as well. But it is, I'm curious about this. It's kind of talked this through the kind of modus operandi of going with a much shorter contract, particularly after we'd just come off Eddie Jones being signed on for 5 years only to leave after one.
I think that's part of the reason right there is, you know, you don't want to get burned in the same way that you got burnt the last time. Like, you know, also, as you mentioned, you know, some with epilepsy, that's obviously going to sort of take up a lot of time away from the rugby field, and you can't really commit long term when you've got, you know, a responsibility like that, which is going to take up a lot of time and is sort of often in a sort of state of change and flux, unfortunately, is a situation with that condition. Look, it sort of sets up like when I was at his first press conference, and it sets up like he's essentially just, he's there to build the innings. He's there to kind of build the foundations for an Australian coach to take over from 2025, whether that be a Stephen Larkham after he gets, you know, a couple more years under his belt at the Brumbies, a Dan McKellar when he comes back from Leicester, you know, a Les Kiss. It just sort of, that's what, it, and like, it's, if the job is still to be done, he will stay on for 2 years. Like, he made that clear as well. This isn't a cut and dry, I'm only here for 2 years that I'm out type deal. Like, he will, if he feels like there's still more work to do, he will stay on to the World Cup. You know, if the situation changes, he will stay on to the World Cup. But it did seem like this is just sort of, instead of throwing someone to the Wolves or throwing a coach that just might not be sort of the right person to solidify a really sort of fragile, I don't want to say fragile, but like after a year we've had, it's just a tense time where you've got to build confidence and you've got to sort of take those first two or three steps, which an experienced coach can do. I think this is sort of why they've brought him in, you know, where, you know, it's, this isn't looking for the sort of, you know, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. This is kind of the drive to that before we can actually sort of set up that, hopefully, this golden decade, as everyone calls it.
Well, it feels weird calling it the golden decade now. I've stopped calling it that because we're already halfway through it and currently it's a shit show. But I was going to ask the question of you know, in that case, who do you think is... I think Schmidt would probably want to try and bring on a lot of Australian assistants, essentially.
Yeah.
To kind of look for that next person, that next coach that can come through the ranks and grow under him and kind of set some sort of, you know, plan in place for future success. And I love the fact, Dylan, you literally put into the comment section, what about Kevin Foote? of course, get him in immediately.
Well, before we jump down that rabbit hole, Nick, of what's happening down in my home city, I just want to add, I think if there is going to be a succession plan, it'd be really good if they actually looked at what the Demons did in the AFL, because they were a shit show for a long time. And then they brought in Paul Roos, you know, premiership winning coach with the Swans, to really steer the ship. But he only signed a short-term contract with a plan of finding a succession and training them. So when they found Simon Goodwin worked under Roos for at least a year, maybe two, before he took the reins. And then the Demons won a premiership. So that's what it needs to be. It can't just be this chop change, because yeah, there's no security for players. Players then don't know who they're playing for, what their standards are. If Schmidt comes in, he's got this old school, quiet, stoic style, and then you bring in a high profile, big mouth character, it's not going to work. So there needs to be, you know, if you wanted to call it the golden decade, it needs to have 10 years of plan and successions, which, again, I know Australian rugby is not known for thinking beyond 10 days, but that's what we need to be thinking about. And I think that's where I think Joe Schmidt is the right guy. We just need to make sure that those succession plans are being talked about now, so that if it is, my God, I hope it's not Steve, but if it is Steve Larkham, he leaves the Brumbies next year, doesn't do two jobs, leave the Brumbies to work under as the assistant coach of Joe Schmidt to then take over. Or, you know, if it's Dan McKellar, then he comes back and, yeah, doesn't work two jobs, does the one, learns, grows, and then takes it over.
Can I just, on that path, I just throw up an option. And I love the analogy, and I reckon there's a name I didn't throw up there that I reckon could be going down this path. There's a guy by the name of Jason Gilmore. Yeah, he's taken on more responsibility. He's assistant at the Waratahs, Australia A coach, Junior Wallabies coach when they went to France. And I went to, I think Argentina went down to France by a point. Long rumored if they get rid of Darren Coleman this year, he would probably take over. But say Waratahs bounce back, I think he'd be the perfect option for that, just to kind of learn under Schmidt, maybe still do that Australia A coaching on the side if there's no sort of clashes or something like that, and all of a sudden take over for 2025. Like, he's a, and from all reports, gets along really well with the players, has a great rugby mind, and I think he could be that guy if you want to really sort of issue in that succession plan. And without sort of minimal disturbance to Super Rugby clubs and what Dan McKellar is doing in Leicester.
I agree with that. But the other part is I think there's just more opportunity for Australian coaches to learn under Schmidt. Like, there's so much more opportunity where we could have an extended coaching squad to go in and learn and do development for that level of rugby, for that succession plan, so that it's not just, you know, the board or a handful of people that are bought into this. There is a coaching platform set that everyone's on the same wavelength that we're building and growing to, and we haven't had that growth. It's been, you know, as Dylan said, they don't look past 10 days. It's simply just get in, first in, best dress, pay what we can, and get someone to sign and do the job, even if the job's shit. And, you know, I just don't think that that's going to be a problem for Joe Schmidt. I think what he's going to have as a problem is going to be too many other people telling him what to do. I think we need to pull back that and allow him to work his operation so we can see his results. No more, you know, no more implementation from anywhere else, just him and his results alone.
Would we argue then that probably coaching's been like a top three issue in Australian rugby then? Which, off the back of this? Because, I mean, there's a lot of good coaches that are out and about, like, who are still coming through the ranks. I mean, we had Dan McKellar, who did very well at the Brumbies. Larkham has done well at the Brumbies, even though I know, Dylan, you're not as keen on him being in the Wallaby setup, which I actually want to poke you a little bit more about. But even someone who, you know, for example, like Simon Cron, who worked under Steve Hansen over in Japan and already looks a much more mature coach, even though he's only done a year or so at the Force. So there is, and even, you know, coaches who are currently still out there in the ether and available, like the first one that comes to mind is Andy Friend, who also has been in the Island system for quite a while. He's coaching all of the Super Rugby sides have still looked like, there's potential there, but it's potential that it's just not quite being reached. Is coaching one major factor in that?
Absolutely, coaching is a problem. Like, we don't set the bar high enough for coaches, and we don't train coaches enough in give them opportunities to learn, you know, to get mentors when you're doing your level two rugby. You know, it's a given. You should be getting that, right? I think that's the case, Dylan. It's really hard. Like, you look at what people are trying to, you know, in Clubland, you don't get coaches. Like, in Clubland, you're a coach, you do the work you can, and hopefully you find an assistant in growth. And then you get an opportunity somewhere else where someone takes you under the wing, so you learn from them to take on their position when they go higher or they leave. And it's one of those things, it's that transition period. But at the very top of, you know, Australian rugby coaching, it's not there. There is, and hopefully, as I said, there's an extended training, like coaching the coaches, where we just learn and develop that whole process for us.
Well, hey, look, I think if you've got someone who's got the brains and the capabilities and the success that Schmidt has, milk it for as much as you can. Get a full Schmidty out of it. That's all you can. You need a full Midi and you need a full Schmidty. I pray to God we don't fucking butcher this. Let's not butcher this one, please. let's not look back and go and let's not have another Dave Rennie and be like, what could have been? What could have been if we didn't sack the poor bugger? Let's move on to the final topic of the evening, and that is what's going on down in Melbourne, which is of course the news that kind of came out. It's been kind of building for the last month or so that effectively the Melbourne Rebels were up to $10 million in debt. The number keeps changing, which was basically reported in the Australian Financial Review at first. But it then culminated further than that with, you know, a lot of the leadership group of the Rebels saying, you know, kind of dismissing it and saying that the Rebels are in a good position. And then lo and behold, they go into voluntary administration a few weeks back. It's been bloody quiet from them addressing that sort of front. There's because there's even been the likes of the chairman recently departed as well, and we didn't hear a peep from them. It's mostly been just pre-season and talks like that. Dylan, the last time we had you on, it was also ranting about the Melbourne Rebels, and I don't want you to think that we only want to invite you on the show when we have something negative to say about Victorian rugby. But what's going on here? Where do you sit as someone sitting in Melbourne, someone who has followed the Rebels for a while? What's the headspace?
Well, I don't mind being the guy that you call on for a Rebels rant, because it's better to do one thing really good than to do a whole bunch of things shit. It's bizarre, to be honest, because as you said, like, it got announced in the review, in the Australian Financial Review. That's where I read about it and went, what's going on? What's a voluntary minute? Why? And then you're right, that number's changed. I think at first I saw it was 4 million, then 6 million, then 9 million. Now last week it said 10 million. You sort of go, no one at this organization has come out and said, hey, this isn't happening, or yes, it's happening and we're really grateful for the support from Rugby Australia. It's just, it's silence. I think there's been a couple of social media posts about preseason that have a little bit of a cheeky jab about still in the fight or family or something like that. I giggled out the other day. But, you know, this, it's like the Eddie Jones going to Japan. Like, oh, I'm not having currently in talks with them. Like, properly denounce it, come out and make a statement. Otherwise, people run their own narratives. And I think that's what's happening initially. That's initially what I thought was happening. Because they're not addressing it, it doesn't feel like there is anything to say or do. Like,
my inner social media person, because it says, like, you're either doing, it's either they're doing it for two reasons. One, that they're, you know, there's actually nothing to it. It's been over exaggerated, and they're just hoping it goes away once the season kind of comes around. And they're hoping that they can just limp to the finish line and get there. Then they'll be right. That's one side of it. The other side is that there's a roaring bonfire going on, and they don't know exactly how they're going to address it and speak about it openly on a social media platform and communicate it to the Victorian rugby public. And they're deliberately taking their time with it.
Well, I think, though, you can still take your time and confirm. Like, if it's not true, for argument's sake, they say it's not true, come out and go, the story published in the Australian Financial Review is false, is categorically false. We are denying all of it, and we will not speak on this again. We're focused on the 2024 season, that be the end of it. But because they don't address it, it runs. And if it is true, come out and say, look, yes, the club is not in the best financial spot. We're not sure what's happening, but we are working towards it. We've been in contact with Rugby Australia and others. We're looking for other sponsors, and our player welfare is our priority. So please respect the player's privacy. And that's the last comment we're going to make. And I know people, you know, journos like Nathan will like to sit in that press conference and press and want every answer under the sun. But you don't have to pretend like it's not a problem. If it's not a problem, say it's not a problem and move on. If it is a problem, us as fans can go, all right, we know that there's something going on. But all I'm seeing online is, yeah, these articles talking about why the Rebels should be cut from Super Rugby and a bunch of people jeering. And it's like, well, I'm not even going to come. I can't come to their defense on that, because I don't even know what's happening as a fan. And that feels pretty disrespectful to fans and your city and the people that did get behind you. And this was a little problem last time.
Honest question here. How do you feel about the Rebels? And I know that, you know, you and I have spoken about this a couple of times, you know, leading up to us recording and stuff. And, you know, we have different thoughts, feelings, opinions on how the Rebels sit right now. And I'm using that as in a blanket term deliberately. Where does Melbourne sit right now? Both, you know, not just in terms of the, not removing the financial situation right now, been around for 13 years, still haven't made a finals berth, probably got one of the most exciting rosters that they've had ever, but at the same time, it feels like they've had exciting rosters for years now, and they still haven't achieved results. Where does Melbourne sit for Victorian rugby fans, or at least for you?
I was a member for 10 years, and then I can't do this anymore. Like, it's not worth it. I'd be sad if they got cut, to be honest. I don't think I was never one of those people that believed Australian rugby needed to grow through cutting a team. But at some point, the administration, this coaching group needs to take a look at themselves. None of these guys really have an impact on Victorian rugby. None of them are really Victorian guys in the same way that, you know, the Women's Rebels is different. Like, the vast majority of those girls, and I don't know the number, come out of the Roth Cup, come out of the Vic State, the Vic Axe women team. So you'd find that a lot of the clubs around Melbourne would care about that team because they care about those girls, they care about that their success. Most people don't know who the Rebels are. Most aren't really concerned with who the Rebels are. They're not coming down to a lot of, they do a lot of the kids clinics, which is great, but you know, you don't see them turn up on a Saturday to a Jewish Shield game. They don't play Jewish Shield because, you know, my best mate Nick Stiles has seen to it that everyone goes and plays up in a two-team hospital cup. Like, all he's doing, all he has done there is strengthen Queensland rugby. He's recruited out of, you know, Reds rejects, or not even rejects. He's recruited Reds players that aren't going to get much of a run into Melbourne, paying them a salary, but then they're not playing for the Rebels. They're going back playing in Queensland. So if they're not good enough to play at that level, why are we signing them? Let them play club rugby in Queensland. If the Reds really want to re-sign them, sign them. It doesn't feel, I feel to me that there's a disconnect. It seems surprising to read that there were 3,000 people at their trial game on the weekend because they can't get 3,000 people to Amy Park. There's no understanding of the current sporting climate in Melbourne to have the Super Round. I think it's a great idea. I think the Super Round's great. I've gone both years. But they're not doing anything different to try and bring more people in or more fans. It's just this, oh, yeah, it's on. Like, this sporting capital. It's in the sporting precinct. There should be more. They really should have become more successful. And it's something my old man said it. He goes, when they started, they were losing by a lot. What would have mattered if they were losing by a lot with Victorian players? Eventually, that would have continued to build this competition, build it to be stronger. And from there, yeah, they would have found inevitable success. Instead, they've gone out, they went hunting, they went looking for older players or big names. Most of them came back to bite them in the ass, and they never really changed that structure. So, yeah, they've got a really great squad, but if they're not a great, they've got talented players, but they might not play well together. They might not be the right thing for the Rebels. And that's rather than building a long-term, again, I talked about succession before, they haven't built a long-term succession. And I think just quickly going back to what I was saying about like Nick Stiles sending these guys up to Queensland, I know of guys that play Jewish Shield that got told, if you want to get looked at for the Rebels, you need to go and play in Sydney or you need to go and play in Queensland. So these guys going, well, no, my job's here, my family's here. I don't understand it's a sacrifice, but like that's pretty shitty to tell some of these guys that.
And also kind of seems counterproductive because if you want to play for the Melbourne Rebels, you should play your rugby in Melbourne, shouldn't you? Does that seem like a ridiculous thing to me? That doesn't seem like a ridiculous thing to contend to. I mean, I'm kind of doing some research around this off the back of chats that you and I have had and looking at even, you know, a lot of clubs would send players to, you know, a competition like the Shoot Shield or the you know, the Hospital Cup. I mean, the Brumbies do it, the Force do it, but I also do know that the Brumbies send a lot of their senior players to play in the John Mundent Cup. And I know that the Force do actually send, if not their academy, then also a lot of their senior players to play in the Fortescue Premier Grade. Not as many as last year because they had that Toyota series with the Cheetahs going on, but Passatoa still played, Pryor still played, Ollie Cummins still played in that competition last year. And the thing that surprised me, like, Not a single one played in the Dwarf Shield last year. Not a single player.
Pono Famosili did.
Yeah, Pono was the only, and he was playing number 8.
Yeah, which is, when you think about it, what does that do to that club? Get to go, oh, we've got a 140-kilo number 8 that is a nightmare to tackle. Great. What does that do for his rugby development in terms of becoming a better prop? What does that do for the Rebels? Because again, he's not learning to be a prop. He's just pick and go off the back of a scrum. Like, that's not, if the goal was to turn him into a number, I'd absolutely send him back to clubland. But why not? If he's needs to learn to scrum, get him to learn to scrum.
And it's one of those things as well. The thing which annoys me is that connection piece. All well and good. Essentially, it's that whole West Bulldogs team is like they're trying to essentially turn that into the third tier and, you know, build, you know, the Gordons are through there. There's a lot of those sort of Rebels boys that have ended up there. That's all well and good. But, you know, there's on-field connection. There's also off-field connection. Connection with your community. Connection with the sort of, again, your local competition. I feel like they just, again, I never seem to be a connection there. When you have guys like, you know, Monty Iwani coming back, you know, Melbourne born and bred. Was he playing? He wasn't playing Jurisdiction, you told me? There's like five or six Melbourne-born players in the squad. There are more Melbourne-born players squad, or more Melbourne-born Wallabies, that I think went to France, than the Storm have created for in the NRL. Like, there are genuine Melbourne hopes coming out of that. That's what disappoints me the most, is there are legitimate Melbourne guys to celebrate that should be sort of, as I said, playing for those clubs regularly if they're not in Wallaby camp or doing any of that sort of stuff. Yep. They're just not. Or they are. They're playing number eight and not exactly, it's probably treating the comp with the respect it deserves.
Josh, what do you think about this? Because I have one more question I want to poke Dylan with on this before, you know, we kind of talk further on this topic. What do you think about this situation and the situation down in Melbourne?
Look, it's one of those things, right? It's either true or it's false or it's part thereof. We're going to find out in the end. As you guys have already, you know, heard from me, and Dylan, you haven't heard this yet, I don't believe. But, you know, my left field solution is we get Twiggy, he buys out the Rebels. We have a monopoly then for Twiggy on top of all of the rugby in Australia. Slowly but surely he takes over. We're funded and grassroots becomes an actual like priority in the clubs. And the sad truth is that grassroots and development in Melbourne is not a priority. And that needs to change. And I think, you know, that shows the commitment for sponsorship, for money, for support locally. You know, it's not there. And it's not there because it's not grassroots. It's not, you know, woven into the creation of local clubs, and it needs to be.
So I actually really like that because I don't know. I don't know if that's what Twiggy's interested in, but yeah, like, privately funding it, that'd be the way to go. And yeah, 100% it needs to go into grassroots but I always think people say it's grassroots. And to me, that is these teams in Melbourne. That isn't feeding the top tier, you know, the top winning teams in Shoot Shield. It's like the rich get rich doesn't help, you know, what is it they say? The rising tide raises all ships. Well, that's not the case because our weakest link. And if we keep trying to strengthen the back end of the chain, that chain's eventually going to break. And I think if the Rebels leave Melbourne, rugby in Victoria will continue. There's been these teams have existed long before the Rebels, and they'll probably continue to exist long after the Rebels. But it will change the dynamic and how people view Australian rugby. It'll change the desire to bring Wallabies games. They've been a hell of a lot more frequent since the Rebels started than before them. So that will change. And yeah, it will change the number of players recruited out of Melbourne, guys like Leota or even Walisi. Yeah, that'd be really sad.
It's kind of sad that you kind of answered one of the last question I was going to ask you in part, because the feeling that I had was, yeah, if the Rebels departed, it doesn't feel like anything would change in terms of how the comp would run, the quality of the comp, everything around it, based on, you know, on what you're teling me. But the last question thing I wanted to ask you about is obviously they're building on, like, the idea has obviously been that if we make it this side a competitive, successful side that gets wins and gets results, hopefully that drives the audience to watch, and hopefully leads to success. I think that's kind of the approach that they've tried to take. That has not panned out. What happens if this Rebels team, for example, does really well this year? What happens if they make finals? What happens if they actually perform? Is that enough to warrant them continuing and to galvanize the Victorian rugby community to say, hey, we should get behind this side?
Well, winning fixes everything. If you think back to 2022, everyone in New Zealand were sharpening their pitchforks at Ian Foster. You know, they wanted him gone. And the All Blacks won and made a World Cup final, and he did a fantastic thing that year. And they had a really successful 2023, you know, shy of not winning the World Cup final. So, but winning changed that, because at the end, no one was calling for his head. Like, he's not the reason they lost that World Cup final. So I think that if the Rebels were to win, to go on this great winning streak, to be successful, make finals, be a contender, maybe not win final, you know, maybe not win the premiership, but actually put in a good fight, yeah, it would be, because people will start to go, well, it's worth my time going out to watch them. So, yeah, winning changes everything. Will it be enough to save them? I don't know. Depends on if it's actually $10 million.
Yeah, that's a dangerous number. it is true. Well, we'll finish off with some quiet little housekeeping news and things. First of all, in light of us talking about Clubland, Mr. Murphy and myself are going to start a little series over the course of this year, focusing around talking to folks in Clubland. The idea essentially is that, you know, we want to hear from clubs. It doesn't matter where you are in Australia. We'd be interested to hear from you. Talk about your experiences with the game. Talk about your feelings towards the game, even the state of how things are being run at the moment. Often there is all the talk of grassroots and getting out to grassroots, which Dylan alluded to. But I think it's time we ask the question, what does that look like? Josh, you and I have spoken about this quite a bit, enjoying a beer down at Madawi on Friday night after Merriweather drops by to play a game or equivalent. You feel pretty much the same, don't you?
Absolutely. And I think it's a good plug from grassroots clubs to tell us what they think grassroots is and what they also need. And we want to hear that. We want to hear both sides. We want to hear how your club's going, what your thoughts are on ARU, what your thoughts are on the local clubs, you know, even the competition you're a part of. I've had the privilege to have travelled quite around Australia and be part of clubs in lots of areas, including in Alice Springs with the Dingo Cubs. Like, we want you guys to, you know, to plug yourselves and come in here and give us your views and thoughts and something that we might then be able to expand on, and who knows, create a community basis that might kick the ass of ARU and get you some more support as well.
So if you're interested in having a chat to us, coming on the pod, talking about how rugby is in your little neck of the woods, even some of the challenges your club is facing, you know, whether it be sponsors, whether it be actual numbers, getting boys down to training, boys or girls, shoot us an email. I'll drop our email into the description, thedroppedkickoff@gmail.com. Shoot us an email and we could tee up a time and we can have it and try and chat in any way, shape or form. We'll probably come up with some sort of funky name for it. I don't know, in the clubhouse, club chat, over a beer, probably some sort of pun on a beverage that we consume. Maybe something involving the Madawi winning song, which if you haven't heard it, go Google it. It's the best winning song in the world, in all of rugby.
Definitely a disclosure statement with that, please.
So last poll to finish off, trials are still continuing. Nathan alluded to it in his news roundup. But there's more games happening this weekend, isn't there, Nathan? What's coming up this weekend for fans to enjoy?
Absolutely. I mean, we've got a couple of games coming up this weekend. The biggest, man, from a bias perspective, will be that Reds Waratahs game at Roma. I guess doubleheader with the women's game, I believe, on the Friday. Which again, will be both two really good clashes right there. As I, you know, Waratahs, as mentioned, sort of went down to the Rebels over the weekend, but will probably bring a lot more of their star players back in. Outside of, I believe, Dave Parecki might be out just for this one, but back for the sort of opening game. And Reds looked strong against the Force. Really, essentially what this is going to be is two really entertaining teams just throwing the ball around, just seeing what happens.
Just don't put Vinavalu back on. He did three runs for three drops. Don't do it again, please.
Look, the only way is up. That's all I'm going to say. Someone's got to get beat by Max Jorgensen when he scores a double. All we're going to say. But before that, if you're in Perth, go down, check out the Force taking on the Brumbies. Obviously, there's no Nick White for the Brumbies to terrorise. He's still getting his shoulder sort of fixed up, but he'll be sweet for round one. Both two sort of teams coming off trial wins. Force look like a real sort of exciting, almost underdog team for this year. The way they played against the Reds, is that fair to say?
Yeah,
I'd agree with that.
So, again, two really good games. The Reds and Waratahs ones on Stan. Don't have a force game yet, but fingers crossed they get over the line. And, yeah, we're only 2 weeks away from rugby actually starting up again in sort of Australia. So, sort of can sort of keep ticking off the days. And we can finally get there, I think, February 23rd.
Feels weird, hey? Feels weird that it's a new year. It's a new year. But I'm so wary at this point. It always feels like a new year. It'll never cease to amaze.
It's like one of those scary movies when you kind of just like creep around the corridor and you're just waiting for something. Something's going to jump out at you. You know it. But it's just like, shit, where's it coming from? Something's going to come and trip me up here. I don't know what it is. Then we just got to wait for that moment where I get tripped up and we go, I knew it. Shit, it's coming the entire time.
Yeah, it's also probably good to mention as well, Six Nations is also underway too. I think, we haven't got a bye week this weekend after that opening week. It's in rounds of two, isn't it? So we've got...
Yeah, so Scotland and France to kick off, and then we've got England-Wales, which will be a great game, and then Ireland-Italy to conclude.
Oh, shit. That's a good one. I reckon...
That's a good weekend of footy.
That is a good weekend of footy.
Three great games. Can't complain.
There'll be a lot to like in that one. I reckon, should we quickly throw in a pick from all three of you as a final send-off as to who do we think is the most likely underdog to potentially win in the Six Nations from those three fixtures? Let's finish off with a quick-fire random hot take pick that'll land you definitely in hot water. So Josh, I'm going to throw you under the bus and give you the least amount of time first.
Yeah, sweet. All right, so I want the Messi of rugby to win, definitely. So he's called it. I've heard it. It's sticking. He's definitely done some really good publicity there. I definitely want Scotland to win the series this year. That's my pick, 100%. But as it stands right now, Italy are on top of France, and I would like to see that continue.
Oh, wouldn't it be? who doesn't want Italy to win some games? It's true. Dylan. Who do we think? Are we in agreement there? I can't imagine Italy beating Ireland, but this weekend. But I can see Scotland beating France.
Yeah, but I think if it's going to be Scotland's year, this is the year. They've had what looks like the least amount of change to their squad. Don't quote me on that. So that, I think if it's going to be their year, it's this year. So yeah, let's get around Scotland to get their first Six Nations.
Finally, the eternal Five Nations champions. They deserve another one. Nathan, do we want to talk about that England Wales game and how satisfying it would be for England to lose at home?
Oh, it'd be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, so good.
I'm gonna go the reverse though. I reckon they put 30 on Wales.
That's
what? One hot take. Wales were not good that first half. They were all over the place.
That was shit.
The emotion of coming back and getting so close, like it's a young Wales team. I don't know how bad Marcus Smith's injury is, but George Smith's looked very comfortable in that 10 jersey. I think it'll be sort of the exact same sort of first half. England just cruise out to a lead and Wales go, all right, cool, this is the time we come back. I'll hit the gas and it'll just be flat battery. And they'll go, shit. And England just cruise away with the game and put a score on them. Like if any game England's going to get up for, it's going to be this and the Irish. Like, this is going to be an easy game to get up than the Irish. So I reckon they target it and put a number on them.
You heard it here, Brett Back on England 30 plus.
Amen. Well, cheers, gentlemen. First pod is in the can for 2024. Special thanks to Dylan for making the journey around. Maybe we might see you on another pod later in the year when the Rebels are about to play the grand final and beat the Crusaders in Melbourne. To record their first ever championship. Will we see that? We'll see you for that one.
I think I'll break open the expensive whiskey if that happens.
If that happens, we're seeing you out of the hospital bed because one of us has a concussion or something like that and really just having some vivid dreams.
Yeah.
No, they brought in the tackle height, you know, to stop those concussions.
That's a live podcast from the stadium, 100%.
Yeah, we'd have to get the phone out. Live podcast from the stadium. No intro music, no nothing. Yeah. It's just as raw as it gets.
Yep.
Well, a pleasure, gentlemen, as always. And to all of our listeners, welcome to 2024. Let's hope it's a nicer ride.
we've got another week to get back on the horse and take that horse to the water. And you can ask that horse, you can say, hey horsey, do you want to have a drink or do you want to swim? Yeah, and it's up to that horse to then realize what he wants to do in his life. So we're looking forward to, like I say, getting back on that horse.
And are you looking forward to getting back on the horse 6 months since we last saw you?
I don't like horses. I can't ride.
Give myself enough for cut.